Beginning in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. For the week of May 21st, 2004, this is the RAIN Report, Ham Radio's audio feature magazine of the Internet. I'm Blair Alper, KA9SEQ. Note to our listeners, RAINReport.com will be moving to a new server over the next 2 weeks. This may result in occasional interruption of service at times. We thank you for your patience during this server upgrade. This week, we bring you our first excerpt from the 2004 Dayton Hamvention. I'll share some upbeat observations with you about the now-completed Hamvention after we hear from William Cross, W3TN. He works in the Public Safety and Critical Infrastructure Division of the FCC's Wireless Bureau. The Wireless Bureau is responsible for overseeing the U.S. amateur radio service. Here is the first excerpt from Cross's forum presentation. He discusses the most important issues in the Commission's Notice of Proposed Rulemaking, WT Docket 04-140.
The first one is the Notice of Proposed Rulemaking and Order that was released April 15th, WT Docket Number 04-140. You need to put this number on your comments so they end up in the correct docket. The staff members that receive the comments work in the secretary's office, and they organize them into the filing system. None of them are hams, and they do not read your comments. The NPRM, in order, addressed 20 petitions for rulemaking, including one informal request. 12 of these petitions were denied, 12 of the 20. The rest were either granted, which means we proposed what the petitioner requested, or granted in part, which means we proposed at least one rule change the petitioner requests. The NPRM proposes to revise operating privileges for all licensees, even novices. It also proposes to eliminate obsolete and duplicate rules, to conform your rules to the international radio regulations, and to amend certain rules to reflect changes in the Commission's organization and practices. There are many rule changes that were proposed. Not all of them are what you would call biggies. The major rule change proposed and the petitioners were a proposal to revise the operating privileges in four HF bands. These include the voice and data privileges, and that came from the ARRL, to permit auxiliary stations to transmit on the 2-meter band. That came from Kenwood. To permit amateur stations to transmit spread spectrum communications on the 1.25-meter band. That was the ARRL. To permit space stations to retransmit international space station communications. That came from the NASA John Glenn Research Amateur Radio Club here. To allow you to designate the club to receive your call sign in memoriam. That was from QCWA. To prohibit an applicant from filing more than one application for a specific vanity call sign. That came from Mr. Edwards, Lynch, and Young. And then there were three that we proposed on our own motion. The first was to eliminate unnecessary restrictions imposed on certain equipment manufacturers, to allow amateur radio stations in or near Alaska more flexibility in providing emergency communications, and to eliminate unnecessary rules in the license examination system. In the high-frequency area of the radio spectrum, there's a couple of different things. The first was phone band expansion. The proposal is to eliminate the telegraphy frequency segments currently authorized novice and technician plus class licensees. These are what you all refer to as the novice bands. And to use that spectrum to expand the portion of 80 and 40 meters that may be used for phone communications. The novice and technician plus class licensees would be authorized to control an amateur station transmitting in what you all refer to as the general or the general and advanced class CW bands. There were some proposals, too, that also affected the VHF privileges. The first one involved auxiliary stations. The first question I get is, what are they? It is defined in Part 97. These are amateur stations other than in a message forwarding system that are transmitting communication point-to-point within a system of cooperating stations. Auxiliary stations are used for repeater and remote base control links, among other things. Auxiliary stations also are used fairly commonly, or should be used, when you're remote controlling something, turning on or off a remote receiver in a 2-meter network, or turning on or off an HF transceiver, for example. The proposal is to allow auxiliary stations to transmit on the 2-meter band above 144.5, except for 145.8 to 146 megahertz. It would promote the development and use of new technologies, including Kenwood's Sky Command system, and it would be consistent with our flexible use policy in the amateur service. The proposal does not affect the frequency segments authorized to automatically controlled beacon stations, space stations, earth stations, or those frequency segments that amateur radio operators have voluntarily agreed to use for simplex and weak signal work. Spread spectrum is another VHF and UHF type of emissions that you're allowed to transmit. Currently, spread spectrum is allowed only on amateur service frequencies above 420 megahertz. The proposal here is to authorize spread spectrum on 222 to 225 megahertz. We also requested comment on whether we should allow transmission of SS emission types on either the 6 or the 2-meter band. There's a section of your rules that deals with station operation standards. This is the section 97-100 through up to 200. There were a number of rule changes that are proposed there. Retransmission of space station communications is one. The proposal here is to allow retransmission of communications between any manned spacecraft and its associated Earth stations. When the rule was written some years ago, the only manned spacecraft were the space shuttles. Well, now we have the International Space Station up there that's a manned space station too. The basis for the request is that there is no distinction between retransmitting space shuttle communications and the International Space Station communications. The Vanity call sign system started, or the recent one, started in the mid-90s. We did it again after adopting rules that were primarily the rules that had been asked for at that time. The system that we used at that time was a paper system. You filled out a form, filled out your list of call signs, and mailed it in. In the almost 10 years since the Vanity call sign system got going again, we've gone to electronic filing, and most of the applications now come in electronically. There were two rules in the Vanity system that you all requested we change. The first had to do with the in memoriam provisions. Our proposal there is to allow currently licensed amateur radio operators to designate a specific amateur radio club to acquire their call sign in memoriam. As the rules are now, the licensee himself or herself cannot express a desire as to which radio club receives your call sign in memoriam, but any of your relatives can, even ones you don't know or don't admit to. Now, people looked at this and they said, this is horrible. This is terrible. This is going to mean all the good call signs are going to be donated to a radio club and we'll never have a chance to get them. That's not correct. What this does is it allows you as the licensee to indicate a preference for which radio club you would like to receive your call sign. The recipient club would still have to apply for the call sign in order to get it. And they would have to apply before former holders and relatives of former holders now deceased applied for it in order to get it. If they didn't apply within 2 years, then the call sign would be available just as it is now in the Vanity system.
You're listening to FCC official William Cross, W3TN, discussing the most salient issues surrounding FCC NPRM WT Docket 04-140. This is the Rain Report.
You're listening to RainReport.com, the only authorized internet source for Rain audio.
The other rule change that was requested had to do with multiple applications. When the system got started, it was a paper system. The big flood of applications for the 1x2 call signs, and this is a 1x2 call sign problem, came in September of 1996. I remember it very well because I had been planning a weekend at the beach that weekend and just go over and, you know, have a weekend off. And my boss came to my office and said, the people in Gettysburg are hearing terrible rumors about applications, the numbers that are going to be filed when Gate 2 opens up and all the amateur extra class licensees are eligible. Here's your ticket to Pittsburgh. So I was up there that weekend when they came in, and we had something like 4,700, 4,800 applications across that weekend for the 1x2 call signs. These were processed, and the big batch of call signs were released in early November '96. Since then, we've gone to the electronic applications, and of course, it's very easy to file multiple applications in an electronic system. What was requested here is that we amend Part 97 to prohibit acceptance of more than one application on one day per applicant for a specific Vanity call sign. The issue is an issue of equity and fairness, according to the petitioners. Additionally, applications have switched so that about 80 to 90% of them are electronically filed now. I mentioned there were also some commission proposals in this item, too. These were initiated. They're called on our own motion. Most of them would not affect many licensees, or they are administrative in nature. The ones that people seem to be interested in are one that deals with amplifiers that are capable of transmitting on the 12-meter and 10-meter amateur bands. The rules prohibit commercial manufacturers from marketing to you all amplifiers that are capable of transmitting on the 12 and 10 meter bands. But you individually can make or modify, or you can buy an amplifier that already has that capability, or you can have someone modify an amp for you so that it is capable of transmitting on the 12 and the 10 meter bands. The proposal here is to clarify and simplify the exceptions in the rules and eliminate the restrictions imposed on manufacturers as compared to the restrictions imposed on individual licensees. The proposal would allow manufacturers to market equipment in the U.S. that they now may market overseas. The intent of the current rule is to prevent commercial manufacturers from marketing to CB operators RF power amplifiers that have been approved for use at amateur stations. And this rule dates from 1978. Think about what's happened in the world of personal communications between 78 and now. I mean, cellular, Nextel, family radio service, GMRS, all this other kind of stuff is out there. None of that even was on the drawing board or existed in 1978. So CB itself has seen some major, major changes since then. Section 95.411 of our CB rules prohibits, under any circumstances, an individual from attaching an external RF power amplifier or any device capable of amplifying the signal to a CB transmitter. Therefore, an individual who uses an amplifier at a CB station would violate a CB radio service rule, not an amateur service rule.
This has been the first excerpt from a 2004 Dayton Hamvention talk by FCC official William Cross, W3TN. To read the text of the FCC NPRM WT Docket 04-140 discussed in this RAIN report, go to the Sites Mentioned page on RAINReport.com. Be advised that the commentary cutoff date for WT 04-140 is June 15th. Next week, William Cross will discuss ham radio's hottest issue today, broadband over power lines, BPL. Before we wrap it up this week, I'd like to pass along some observations about the just-concluded Dayton Hamvention. According to RAIN founder-producer Hap Holly, KC9RP, it was the best hamvention he has attended. Check-in was quick and easy. The buses/shuttle service from Salem Mall to Hera Arena was by far the most organized and efficient ever. Too bad for the flea market folks, on whom Mother Nature rained much of Saturday. Nothing new there. In no particular order, Hap would like to thank the following for their assistance and hospitality during the weekend. Byron Lee, KC9EEK, eek! Vern Jackson, WA0RCR, and his wife Dottie, KG0VN, Blair Alper, oh, that's me, KA9SEQ, my lovely lady, Leanne Main, KB9ZEF, Shirley Roberts, N8LX, and husband, Lynn, N8LXK. Chris Peterson, KG0BP, Dave Gross, boy is he ever, KF9AV, Steve Parker, KC9KU, Hamvention General Chair, Gary DeCombs, N8EMO, Ruben Meeks, W8GUC, and the Dayton Amateur Radio Association, Dick Ross, K2MGA, and Rich Moseson, W2VU from CQ Publications, Tim from ITA, and of course, Hap's wife Stephanie, KA9WKD. And we'd be remiss not to thank Merle Heinlein, KB9NOH, for feeding and entertaining Hap and Stephanie midway through their Chicago to Dayton road trip, both down and back. Hap gets so cranky when he's hungry. Incidentally, Merle was the first to interview Hap live a few years back on his Danville, Indiana area net. Thanks to all who helped this Dayton-Hamvention be the best one yet. And in case you're wondering, the 2005 Hamvention will be held at Hera Arena as it has for decades in suburban Trotwood the weekend of May 20th. The Rain Report is copyright 2004 Rain, all rights reserved. I'm Blair Alper, KA9 SEQ. See you next time.